verses from the prophecy of Habakkuk, chapter 1. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see. O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not say. Why dost thou show me iniquity, and cause me to behold grievance? For spoiling and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contention. Therefore the law is slept, and judgment doth never go forth. For the wicked doth compass about the righteous, therefore wrong judgment proceedeth. Behold ye among the heathen, and regard, and wonder marvelously. For I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For, lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. Their horses also are swifter than the leopards, and are more fierce than the evening wolves. And their horsemen shall spread themselves, and their horsemen shall come from far. They shall fly as the eagle that hasteth to eat. They shall come all for violence. Their faces shall sup up as the east wind, and they shall gather the captivity as the sun. And they shall scoff at the kings, and the princes shall be a scorn unto them. They shall deride every stronghold, for they shall heap dust and take it. Then shall his mind change, and he shall pass over and offend, imputing this his power unto his God. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord my God, mine Holy One? We shall not die. O Lord, thou hast ordained them for judgment, and, O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. Wherefore lookest thou upon them that deal treacherously, and holdest thy tongue when the wicked devoureth the man that is more righteous than he? Now chapter 2. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower, and will watch to see what he will say unto me, and what I shall answer when I am reproved, or what I shall answer concerning my complaint. And the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tables, that he may run that readeth it. For the vision is yet for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak and not lie. Though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come. It will not tarry. Behold, his soul which is lifted up is not upright in him, but the just shall live by his faith. Now chapter 3, verse 2. O Lord, I have heard thy speech and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. in the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. Verse 16. When I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice. Rottenness entered into my bones, and I trembled in myself, that I might rest in the day of trouble. When he cometh up unto the people, he will invade them with his troops. Although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail, and the fields shall yield no meat. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. Yet I will rejoice in the God, in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me to walk upon mine high places, to the chief singer on my stringed instruments. Now, will you trust the Lord will bless this reading, which introduces to us the period of ministry in which we have an exercise to speak on various passages of the Word of God that would help us in anticipation of our forthcoming exercise in the Gospel. And I feel very much the atmosphere in which our meetings is about to be launched, quite unique to most of us, quite difficult possibly to anticipate, when we think of all the trouble, the unrest, the unpleasantness, and indeed the fear that is prevalent in the locality and in the city and in the country. And I thought that I myself found considerable comfort, that measure of which has been ministered to my own soul in coming to the prophecy from which we have read tonight. Oftentimes I think of Habakkuk in his distress and in his doubt, and often describe him as the doubting Thomas of the Old Testament. That may sound a very hard parallel, but I do think it's very appropriate. For we see in the opening chapters of this prophecy a man who finds it difficult to believe. And yet, before the prophecy ends, we find him resting. And we find him rejoicing. And we find him recognizing the true character of his Lord and his God. Now, with that in view, I want to examine the prophecy very briefly, and with the intention that we might be able to stimulate our faith and strengthen our courage in relation to what is before us in the good will of God in days to come. You will have noticed in the opening four verses which we read together words that are very appropriate to the present time. I emphasize the word violence. I emphasize the word spoiler. And also the word strife and contention. And the result of these things, in that the law is slept and judgment doth never go forth. And when it does go forth, it's not right judgment which proceedeth. Now, those conditions, we would almost feel, are descriptive of the present day in which we live. I'm not going to use the time to give you the actual setting of the book, because I'm more concerned about the parallels, the application each of us can have as a result of our meditation tonight. While looking at these four verses, fellow saints, you will notice that it's put to the blessed God from the lips of the prophet in question form, because they reveal the perplexities of his heart. It is difficult for the prophet to understand why the Lord is silent under such prevailing circumstances. And you know, fellow saints, when we observe the conditions in our city tonight, when we observe the consequences which they might well produce, in spite of our optimism, we're bound to wonder why it would appear our God is silent. We've been praying collectively throughout the weeks, in many areas, in many assemblies, that God would give us a speedy end to these circumstances and to the conditions amongst us and around us. It might well be, as we have thought the Lord would answer speedily, we are rather perplexed by his apparent silence. The problem of divine silence is a very real one. A very outstanding man wrote on a very difficult subject many years ago, and the great Sir Robert Anderson gave us a work which is called The Silence of God. And sometimes we are brought to face the consequences of divine silence, and then we are forced to ask the reasons for divine silence. And if tonight in your soul, as a result of the evident or the apparent silence of God, there rises a question, then I think the message of this prophecy will bring you peace and rest. Now, I'd love to follow that through. In fact, I must hurry. I don't want to keep you beyond the time. The first four verses then reveal the perplexities of the prophet and presents to us the problem raised by divine silence. That is, as the prophet sees the conditions in his land, he wonders why God is silent when he knows that God is sufficient for any crisis, that God is never taken in an emergency, whenever or wherever it may arise. He knows that his God has always resources sufficient, but why it should be at this moment that violence, strife, spoiling, contention, false judgment, perverted judgment should proceed and should prevail, he finds it difficult to understand and to reconcile himself to the silence of an all-seeing God. Sometimes we have felt that in our own experience, haven't we? Sometimes we have prayed for God to speak. Sometimes we have had long exercise that God would do what he can do and what he has done in the past. And sometimes we have just to face that at times God to be. Now from verse 5 to verse 11, God speaks. And in those verses, the prophet reveals something of the immediate purpose of God. Now this beautifully alternates throughout the prophecy. First, the perplexities of the prophet. And now, verses 5 to 11, God speaks to him and reveals the purpose behind his present silence. Now, whenever God discloses this to the prophet, he has done this in the private of his soul. He has done it in the quietness of his communion with his servant. Behold, says God, ye among the nations, and regard and wonder marvelously, for I work a work in your days, which you will not believe, though it be told you. You see, it's God speaking. And God is announcing that he is working a work in your days, which you will not believe. And when the prophet considers the answer that God gives at this stage of his exercise, he's now faced with yet another problem. The problem of divine activity. What do you mean by that? I mean this. The prophet doesn't seem to understand why God is acting as he is acting, even though he has revealed it to him. Notice what he's doing. Verse 6. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, that bitter and hasty nation, which march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. And he proceeds, says, God proceeds in these verses to unveil to the prophet his divine activity. And what is the activity? It is an action of discipline. It is an action of judgment. It's not one of deliverance now, which indeed the prophet might have well expected, and for which he was truly exercised. It is now in the word of God himself, directly to the prophet, the purpose of God is being revealed. I'm raising up an instrument that will be used in my hands to exercise my judgment upon my people. They will inhabit dwelling places that are not theirs. What will they do? They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed from themselves. What a description of a military might. What a description of a rapacious, rebellious, rapid foe. They are swifter than the horse and the eagle. They can move rapidly from post to pillar, and there's not a person, there's not a force, there's not a power on earth that can stay their speed and their reckless rapidity. That created another problem in the mind of the prophet. The problem of divine activity. Brethren, is there a possibility that God is using the rapacious men in our midst to discipline his people? Is it possible the Lord is using these very violent men to bring us the closer, to make us more dependent, our persons losing homes, that around which their life has been wrapped, our brethren losing businesses, into which energies relentlessly have been placed? Are we losing privileges which we esteemed lightly? Will the Lord allow the peace and tranquility in which we slept go on? Or is He now allowing this foe to come in and disrupt our materialism and dislodge us from the things around which we have become so closely attached? And are we praying aright, Lord, save us ere we perish? Or are we standing humbly, acknowledging the need for being disrupted in the midst of our lethargy and indolence as the people of God? I don't want to sound harsh tonight, but I feel the message of this prophecy is very, very practical. And then you might ask, well, why should God use such instruments? Why, that's the very next thing the prophet asks. The problems of the prophet. Verses 12 to 21. Look at these verses very quickly, please. They're very, very solemn. Verse 12. Art thou not from everlasting, O Lord, my God, mine Holy One? Yes, God is eternal, brethren. He knows the end from the beginning. The present prevailing conditions did not arise unknown to our God. The eternal knowledge of our God is not to be questioned by the prevailing conditions today. No. But the prophet said, Lord, if thou wert from all eternity, why then should this arise? In your foreknowledge, was it not possible to avert? Can't you see the problem raised by divine attributes? Listen. Verse 13. Thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. That's true. Don't question His divine purity, because in His sovereignty He takes an unholy instrument to discipline. This is what the prophet is saying. Lord, I thought thou wert of purer eyes than to behold iniquity. I thought that the holiness of thine hand and heart was beyond the touch of such an instrument. Don't question His eternality. Don't question His purity. Don't question His stability. Listen, the previous verse, the end of verse 12, for judgment. And, O mighty God, thou hast established them for correction. There is His divine sovereignty. In His sovereignty, He has established them for correction. And if you take time, you will be profited by reading the rest of the description that Habakkuk gives to emphasize his problem. Here's a mighty fisherman. He casts his net. He casts his drag. You see that? My brethren that know anything about fishing will get the difference between a net and a drag. This mighty fisherman casts his net over the sons of men, and throws out his drag and gathers multitudes under his power and control. And when he has done it, he sets his drag up and he worships it as his God and thanks it for all the accomplishments that he has achieved. And this humble prophet asks the living God, why did you allow such a fool to rise up in your eternal foreknowledge? Why art thou so pure than to behold iniquity? And you put your hand to such an instrument to wield discipline upon those that are more righteous. More righteous than he. And the problems, my dear saints, that can arise through divine attributes are very real. We think tonight of the justice of God, and we see the injustice of man, and we wonder why. We see that God is sufficient in heaven to rain judgment upon the ungodly and to deal what he can only deal to them. And yet, I say and I say again, he is evidently using that very unholy instrument to discipline his holy people. What would this produce now? Well, now, if you have perplexities about the situation, and you find problems arising in your soul relative to divine silence, and then to divine activity, and then to the difficulty of reconciling divine attributes, the best thing for us as God's people to do is as what Habakkuk did. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower and will watch to see what he will say unto me. I don't think that this was a literal watchtower. I think that the words describe the closet in a Habakkuk's life where he knew communion with God and where he was prepared to wait until God gave him the answer. I trust that this assembly will find that in the collective exercise in prayer continually throughout these meetings. I trust that each saint of God will find that very place individually in each one's experience, knowing a place where we can meet with God. And in spite of the turbulent circumstances and the trying difficulties and the testing experiences, I will get me to my watch. I will set me upon my tower and will wait to see, and will watch to see what he will answer me. Will each need the consciousness of the divine answer, brethren, if our testimony together is to be effective? Now, what was the answer? I haven't time tonight to develop this, but I want you just to follow one word. Look please at verse 18. Woe to him that increaseth that which is not his. Did you see that word woe? In verse 6, did I say verse 18? Figure 18, one of the words, I'm sorry. Verse 6 of chapter 2. In the middle, woe to him. That increaseth that which is not meet. You'll find in those verses from 6 to 8 the lust for power. Look please at verse 9. Woe to him that coveteth an evil covetousness to his house, that he may set his nest on high, that he may be delivered from the power of evil. There's the lust for place. Look please at verse 12. Woe to him that buildeth a town with blood, and establisheth a city by iniquity. Behold, is it not of the Lord of hosts that the people shall labor in the very fire, and the people shall weary themselves for very vanity? The lust for possessions. Look at verse 15. Woe unto him that giveth his neighbor drink, that puttest the bottle to him and makest him drunken also, that thou mayest look on their nakedness. The loss of passion. Look please at verse 19. Woe unto him that saith to the wood, awake, to the dumb stone, arise, it shall teach. Here is the lust of idolatry. You'll understand what I mean by that. You'll have to take these four and these five woes, and you'll have to see that they describe the condition of the people of God. The reason for the discipline. The reason for the stern measures that God had to bring upon them. And they're outlined in this very severe answer of Jehovah, epitomized in these five woes. You might feel tonight that that would finish the prophecy. Here is a man waiting for the answer, and God reveals to him that the answer is really the reason for the trouble and the discipline. The only hope that he illumines the path with in that place of waiting is this: but the just shall live by his faith. In the context of the original passage which is before us, I'm not thinking now of Romans, I'm not thinking now of Galatians, I'm not thinking now of Hebrews, for the use that the Spirit of God makes of the verse in the New Testament is not the use that's made of it in this context. The truth is this: the just shall live by his faithfulness in the midst of the lust for power, in the midst of the lust for place, in the midst of the lust for possession, in the midst of the lust of passion, in the midst of the lust of paganism, which really means the displacement of God in the life, the just shall live. Shall live, brethren, by his faithfulness. And I think the prophet reaches that in his prayer. Just for a moment now, look at chapter 3. Verse 2. O Lord, I have heard the speech, thy speech, and was afraid. O Lord, revive thy work in the midst of the years. In the midst of the years, make it known. In wrath, remember mercy. What is this? This I'm calling just now the prayer of the prophet. A plea created by divine attributes. In wrath, remember mercy. You see what the prophet has seen now? He sees the blending of divine attributes. He sees that it's possible for God to exercise His judgment. And yet, in the exercise of His judgment, remember mercy. And while under the very lash of divine discipline, says the prophet in his prayer, O Jehovah, the unchanged, unchangeable Jehovah, revive thy work in the midst of the years. My brethren, I hope that we'll take up that prayer tonight. In the very midst of these days of discipline, of difficulty, wouldn't it be a rich, wouldn't it be a rare experience if it pleased God to revive His work? And in His wrath, remember mercy. Brethren, that's what we're looking for. And that's what we trust God will grant us in His mercy. Will He? Yes, says God to the prophet. And as he's prophesying, he's praying. But what is here a prayer becomes a prophecy. Now what I want you to do when you have time, I want you to read the verses from verse 3 to verse 15. And see how the prophets recall former goodnesses of God, former displays of His power and deliverance of His people. And as he recalls that, he rests in the hope that what God did in the past, He will do in the present. As I close, I want to bring it now right to ourselves. What is this assembly tonight as a witness for God? I'm asking you that question. What is it as a witness for God? Right now. Someone says it's not very much. You don't know all the troubles in the meeting. Thank God I don't. Someone said, well, there's much weakness. But we're trusting in God. In spite of us being what we are. Now that's the point, brethren. I know that you've heard these words used in a material sense, but watch. For though the fig tree shall not blossom, Israel was a fig tree among the nations. Neither shall fruit be in the vines. It was a chosen vine for God's pleasure. The labor of the olive shall fail. That was their religious ceremonies, controlled by the produce of the olive in all their worship. The oil for the light, the oil for the meal offering, the oil for the anointing oil of the priest. Though the labor of the olive shall fail. What does the prophet say? Right now the nation is not what it should be nationally. It's not what it should be religiously. It's not what it should be spiritually. To God and man. What are you giving to God? Also, someone, the worship wasn't very high yesterday morning. What was your contribution? Listen. And the fields shall yield no meat. That's the produce for the meal offering. And the flock shall be cut off from the fold. That was the lamb for the morning and evening sacrifice. And there shall be no herd in the stalls. That was the bullock for the burnt offering. It was absent. It wasn't what it should have been. Ah, but he says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. That's it. The assembly may not be what it should be. And I don't want any brother to exempt himself from the meetings because the meeting isn't what it should be in your mind. You get Habakkuk's done. Though it is not what it is intended to be. And although God is not getting what he deserves, conditions may not be just at the moment what they should be. I'm only using it argumentatively. I'm not saying that this is true. But the prophet reaches the high note. Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. And I'm not going to go out of the meeting with a long face and go down out of the temple telling God I'm rejoicing in him and criticizing my brethren and the preacher the whole way home. Won't do, brethren. For the prayer that he has made, he says, is for the chief musician. It's his prayer of praise to his God, the overcomer. Upon my stringed instruments, he took his place in the temple choir. His hand plucked the very strings in it, and his praise ascended, vibrating to God. His confidence in his God. Don't bring the flute to mourn a dirge, brethren. Too many are doing that. Get out your many stringed instrument and vibrate in your soul in confidence and in praise to the living God.